Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
You've got nothing to offer them emotionally or financially.
And what have you got, huh? And tell me this, how can you afford a property in Spain? And speaking of which, what about this, huh? Champagne in the Ballantine. What a pathetic cliche you are, huh?
Cliche? You think you know it all, but you haven't got a clue.
What do you mean, man?
Nothing.
You want a divorce? You want to take my little girl away from me? Is there more?
No.
Is there more?
No, Paul, no!
Tell me, what don't I know? Is there more? Is there? Is there?
James Dempsey joins us once again. A popular demand, James has decided for at least one of his reviews to steer away from our metrosexual Netflix shows and have a look at some real telly, that being Fair Cities on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays and Sundays at 8pm on RTE and of course on the RTE player. Was that a particularly dramatic bit of it that we chose there, or is it like that all the time?
Now, I think it was actually a very bad week for me to kind of, you know, parachute into watching Fair City. Not sight unseen ever. I mean, I've seen episodes before, but it seemed to be the culmination of a very long running, separation plot line between the two characters we heard there being Paul and his estranged, is she his wife? I'm not sure, Niamh. And it ended last night with a first in its more than 4,000 episode run, because Fair City celebrated its 4,000th episode last September. And they had their first ever two-hander, so the entire episode was just between Paul and Niamh battling it out. And I will say, I don't know if the person who asked me to kind of look at soaps, you know, basically wanted me to just tear it apart or rip it apart. That's not what I'm going to do, because the thing about soaps is you really invest a lot of time. What you're buying into when you're watching a soap is not necessarily so much the show or the plot or anything like that. It's just the kind of comfort of having TV that you can sit down and watch regularly, and you know all the history of the characters and you know all of that kind of thing. So, you know, kind of reviewing a soap when you don't know any of that is a bit unfair. What I will say is, based on the two-hander, I actually thought it was fairly well acted. I thought they were very good at being vicious and mean to each other. Mm. And it showed, I think, what a soap can do actually quite well, which is that, you know, I suppose the real purpose of a soap opera, or a serial drama, if you want to give it its kind of posher name, is that it kind of really can focus on issues that take place in everyday people's lives that we don't necessarily see. And in this case, it was a marriage, you know, crumbling. Now, the fact that marriage had been crumbling for a very long time, and also involved, you know, various affairs and lots of backstabbing and embezzlement and so on, is not true to life every marriage. But I suppose at least it does show, you know, what you saw was two people confronting their problems. And it was very entertaining for the half hour I watched. Less entertaining, because I watched four episodes, was there's also a long running storyline that seems to have been informed by, the movie Room, in which a young teenage girl has been secreted inside a secret room and is being kept by a crazy mechanic who this week tried to kill her by giving her sleeping tablets and then suffocating her or killing her with carbon, with fumes from an exhaust pipe.
Oh, crikey.
Before he found he couldn't go through with it, and then released her. And then she had the chance to break free, but appears to have developed Stockholm syndrome, so she won't do it. So you get as much silliness in the drama as you get proper, you know, intrigue in that. And that is part and parcel of a soap opera, because when you're filling 2 hours a week, 52 weeks a year, with a set number of characters, it's just regrettable that the longer a person is in a soap opera, the more ridiculous their life becomes. I mean,
that's interesting, actually, because there always seems to be kind of a moment in soaps when they jump the shark because they've just run out of. And I remember Brookside was a really good soap, really good premise, but then it kind of, there was bodies buried under, and the Irish actor was like a loony.
The Jordashes.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff. So it because it, I suppose that eliminates the relatability.
It very much
which
so.
Which is the real strength of a soap.
I was looking into Fair City this morning, and on the RTE Archives website, which is actually a really, really good website, they do it extremely well. You can watch a sort of little clip of the, you know, the autumn launch of whatever year Fair City was launching in the 1980s. And in it, they say that they envisage it for running for 8 years. And it's been much longer than 8 years now because it is a ratings winner. It's popular. It is, you know, the most popular soap opera in Ireland with about 800,000 to 900,000 viewers every episode, which is a considerable chunk of the audience. So the problem is obviously the longer it goes on, the more unrelatable it becomes. And that is a problem in every soap opera. Now, as I've said before, the only soap opera I watch is Neighbours. And I just... I have it on in the background, and I imagine that's what people have Fair City as well. You don't have to be focusing on every like minute detail plot turn. That doesn't matter. But through whatever TV osmotic properties there are, you just build up in your head a sort of rich fondness for the characters. And it's light and shade in every episode. The problems also stem with the fact that then it comes to a point where the viewers actually know the characters better than the writers do. And we know the back history more detailed and more fully.
Yeah.
And that leads to characters becoming wildly different than they are or how they should be based in the viewing perception. So I guess, all in all, in terms of Fair City, it's not as bad as I thought it was going to be. I could see why people sort of, you know, I do watch a soap, so I can see why people watch it and get sucked in and stuff like that. Will I be tuning in? Probably not, but I enjoyed it for the 4 episodes.
Yeah, a few comments on it. I've invested nearly a year of my life in that Katie Kieran kidnap storyline. It might win an award for the longest running plot of all time. Someone has started a petition for the writers to bring it to a conclusion. Someone else says, for the last 20 years, it seems, Fair City writers flip a coin to decide whether to go with Niamh having an affair or Paul having an affair. They each must have had 40 affairs each. Bit of hyperbole there, I'm guessing. Fair City 2 drag storylines out to a comical degree, all right. Hashtag bring back Billy Meehan dynasty style. And Ruri says, there's a fire tonight, I believe. Fair City loves a good fire. Great way to finish a storyline. They drag it out to death. Similar theme in all of those.
Yeah.
Having said that, you were like, when you were outside, and Niamh on our show, who does actually watch
Fair City, it's like a super fan, really knows everything.
Yeah, and you were discussing the character Paul, that it was it like if someone had just walked in upon the two of you, and this happens a lot when you hear people talking about, you would have thought you were discussing a real person.
Do you think so?
Yeah, because I think that's why soaps work, because there is that relatability thing, and people have conversations about people they know.
Yeah.
And then it switches into a character on a soap.
Now, my father is not a big TV watcher, but he absolutely loves Fair City and Coronation Street and has all, you know, my entire life been watching them. So if you think about it, of the 4,000 episodes of Fair City, he could easily have seen, you know, most of them. And in all that time, he has spent how many episodes has he seen with Paul over the years? You just cannot but take the people into your heart and get so familiar with them that they are like real people, even though obviously they're not real people. Mm. That is what works in soap opera. But it is silly, and it isn't prestige TV, but not all TV has to be prestige TV or peak TV. It doesn't matter. It's just... Yeah, I enjoyed this as an assignment, but I won't be delving further.
Another thing that strikes me that gives soaps longevity is to have humour in it.
Very much so.
And is there that in Fair City? Now, obviously, the one about the marriage imploding, not a good example, of course.
So there were a few lines here and there. I'm not familiar with the characters' names beyond the main ones that I've mentioned already.
Yes.
There's some guy who owns a garage having problems. I mean, and he was talking to one of his employees about alliteration in school, and it was kind of funny. That is the whole point. What is interesting about Fair City as well is, you also have to see, it should reflect Dublin as well. You know, it is set in some sort of like fictional Drumcondra-esque North Dublin suburb. And the truth is that in 2017, that would be being gentrified.
Those houses would be worth a fortune now. That is true.
So I'd be really interested to see how Carrickstown is going to develop over the next, you know, 5 years. Because really, I mean, they got a spa in, or is it a centre? I can't remember. Very famously, in what is probably the most accurate product placement ever on Irish TV.
Yes.
But now they should be getting, you know, a little hipster cafe where they're going for brunch, and the houses should be having Dermot Bannon in, stripped out of all. That's what we should be seeing.
Drew in Kilkenny says, my sister used to play Carly on As the World Turns, an American soap. She used to laugh about the fact that her character was trapped in quicksand on four separate occasions. She's now on General Hospital, and no doubt pulling people out of quicksand. Anyway, a couple of bits of TV news. Bridget and Eamon, which seems to be kind of a bit Marmite-y. People love it or hate it. They've sold it to Amazon.
I mean, I hate it so much I wouldn't even open the jar. So I have not been a fan of Bridget and Eamon in the past. But I am, you know, I will say credit to them. They have just sold the rights for it to be streamed on Amazon's video service in the US. So that joins the likes of Red Rock, which I think is already doing that. And Bridget and Eamon has previously sold to Gold, which is sort of formerly UK TV Gold.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is broadcast there as well. So really, they are making the most out of what started as a YouTube sketch. You know, sketch on the now cancelled Republic of Telly has now had two seasons. It has won the IFTA for Best Comedy and is, you know, being shown around the world.
Yeah, in your face, James Dempsey.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like really making me question my taste levels here. But, you know, as for what an American audience is going to get out of a very broad, you know, sitcom about Irishness and Irishisms in the 1980s, as reflected in modern Ireland, is lost on me. Mm. But look, you know, there's clearly money in this, which means a third season is definitely going to be coming.
Right. And going back to soaps again, RTÉ and the BBC are going to make an EastEnders spin-off. Is this the one that some of the characters come over to live here from EastEnders?
So,
or is this a different thing?
I'm not 100% sure, but basically they, Kat and Alfie, who would be played by Jesse Wallace and Shane Ritchie, they're getting a 6-part series that Shane Ritchie has described as a psychological thriller of all things.
Oh yeah.
It's
dark and psychological, isn't it?
So they're coming over to Ireland to find Kat's long lost son, and they end up in a fictional town called Redwater, which I think is in Wexford or somewhere like that anyway. And it has got serious Irish talent involved. You've got Maria Doyle Kennedy, Fionnuala Flanagan, Angeline Ball, Ian McElhinney. And it's going to be broadcast next month on the BBC and RTÉ at the same time. I mean, they have a long history of co-producing things together. But I suppose it's quite intriguing to see a spin-off of a soap opera, because we don't really think of it as a show that can kind of generate, you know, a sideline gig. But yeah, it's going to be a 6-part psychological thriller.
Yeah, Maria Doyle Kennedy and Angeline Ball, they've got two of the commitments there.
Right, yeah.
They shouldn't have no song out of them. Yeah. Now, one thing soap operas do, though, they do chart changes in society. And as somebody texted in to say, the Fair City has charted how Ireland has shrunk in the sense of we have a motorway network now. But they say, I loved how in the 1980s, any character in Fair City that would leave without dying always went to Galway, which then was a long way away. Now these days, they all have to go to Australia.
I want this. I'll give you $8 for it.
No way. The tag says 12.
$9. And I'll give you some free business advice.
Deal. So, what's the advice?
This is an original 1970s East-West calfskin motorcycle jacket in perfect condition. Know what your shit's worth? Because you just got played.
There you go. That's a clip from Girl Box. Girl Box? Girl Boss, I should say. All 13 episodes of season one are streaming on Netflix from tomorrow. This is based on a true story.
Yeah, James. So this is based... It's very interesting because when it went into production, sort of, it was all looking great for this woman named Sophia Amoruso, who created a fashion label called Nasty Gal in San Francisco in 2006. And that's who we hear, at least we hear via the actress Britt Robertson in the show. And she basically cottoned on to the fact that she could search through vintage clothing stores and pick out items that had been sort of left behind and then flog them on eBay. So she buys, for example, that leather jacket for $8 or $9 and manages to sell it for $600. And she realizes this is a business plan that I can work into a business. And that happened in real life in 2006. She started the label. I think by 2013, Nasty Gal was worth $200 million. And
Crikey.
She was being heralded as this absolute, you know, wunderkind of the tech startup industry. And then in November last year, she had to resign from as CEO of the company, and it filed for bankruptcy and sold to a US company. So that's good news for the show in the long run, because it means that there's going to be
a story arc.
There's a good story arc coming. I don't know if we'll get that many seasons out of it, is the problem. Now, it has good pedigree. It is based on the book Girl Boss, written by the real Sophia. That's a bit of a bestseller. It's kind of like a millennial lean in the Sheryl Sandberg vein, where it's not just about how she did it, but how all young women can do it. And it was optioned by Charlize Theron. And the show was created by a woman named Kay Cannon, who wrote on, you know, 30 Rock and also wrote Pitch Perfect and is sort of seen as a very successful writer of young women in Hollywood.
Okay.
And they shopped it around to various networks and none of them wanted to take it. Most of them said they wanted the title change, that it was too off-putting and stuff like that. And then eventually Netflix picked it up, and we probably will get a second season out of it, because that is often how Netflix rolls. But it was hard work. Now, what was nice about it is it's a good 30 minutes long, which is my favorite thing.
Excellent.
So it's nice and easy. You can breeze through. I breezed through all four of them in 1 2-hour sitting, and it was grand. The real problem is how unlikable the main character is. She's supposed to be this brass, ballsy, you know, slightly anarchist, doesn't, you know, devil may care, takes no prisoners woman. But she's actually just really annoying, you know? And there's just, she's cashing these sort of like, you know, charm checks that her balance cannot cover. And I don't know if it is a problem in the script or if it is Britt Robertson's performance, but really I just found her incredibly unlikable and couldn't understand why any of the other characters in the show either liked her or wanted to support her or do anything, because she comes across as this real spoiled brat. I mean, she is this young woman. When you first meet her, she's pushing her car up the hills in San Francisco after running out of petrol. And like, she's, you know, being real brash and giving the finger to anyone who's beeping and stuff like that. And that's kind of fine. But then she's just constantly throwing out, you know, it doesn't bother me that she's using bad language, but she's almost sort of billed as this kind of anti-heroine. And for a long time in TV, there was all this talk about, where are all the strong female characters? And now we've actually reached this point of, where are all the nice female characters? Because all we get now are damaged, ballsy, obnoxious women in the lead role. And it's kind of a bit tired at this point. The other thing that's kind of interesting about it is, even though 2006 isn't that long ago, it is a period piece. You know, it is still 11 years ago at this stage. So you do get all these cultural milestones and footnotes from that. So there's a bit of nostalgia tipping going on as well. Like, for example, in, I think it's the fourth episode, the episode of The OC where Marissa dies in a car crash and her phone is like a flip phone playing the Nokia tune.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know it spelled out?
I know now.
And there's other things like that. But the main problem with it is just how unlikable the main character is. And for me, I don't know if really it has piqued my interest enough to go back, because the other thing that Netflix is doing is putting out so much original content. I mean, this month alone, we've had, you know, this, the Get Downs, the second half, Mystery Science Theater 3000. Next week, we have Dear White People and Casting JonBenet. There's a six-part documentary series about sort of young people and the online world and sexuality called Hot Girls Wanted, that is very promising as well. They are putting out so much stuff that this almost seems like just another thing to kind of keep you coming back.
Yeah. It also, I don't know, on paper, you know, girl makes fortune from selling secondhand clothes on eBay. So what? Like, is that it? Does she have a limp? Is she black? Is there some other kind of difficulty to overcome?
The other really frustrating thing about it is, so Dean Norris, who people would know as the guy in Breaking Bad, the brother-in-law whose name I can't remember, the FTA agent.
Yeah.
And he plays her father in the show. And he in the first episode, he invites her out to this incredibly opulent, fancy San Francisco restaurant, which would suggest that she comes from means, or at least a nice, comfortable, middle-class background.
Mm.
So when you see her struggling and wanting to make it on her own, which is, you know, sort of the impetus of the whole series, it's a little bit frustrating, because you know there's a big privileged safety net waiting to catch her.
Right, okay, she's not working her way out of the hood then.
No.
Dear. Surely Netflix are targeting Bridget and Eamon to 1 million Irish expats spread around the world. says Luke in Budapest. I'm looking forward to getting a good dose of ah, Jesus, yeah, that's the way it was, out of it, says Luke. Lots of people texted in about, I accidentally called it Girl Box. A lot of people want to see that show for their own reasons. Owen says, I'm currently watching season 3 of Dexter, really enjoying it. What does your reviewer think of the show and is it worth sticking with? Have you seen season 3 of Dexter?
I have not. So I did watch Dexter for a little while and then I just fell out of the habit of watching it. I would have to defer to my mother and brother, who I think watched it to the bitter end and did enjoy it. So yeah, I like their judgment. So it's a family thing. Yeah.
Has your reviewer been watching Line of Duty? It's the most spellbinding television I've ever seen. I'm willing the weekend to go faster so we can get to Sunday night and see what happens next. I was on the floor after the last episode.
So your Niamh, who you mentioned earlier, has also chastised me every week that the episode has come out going, are you watching Line of Duty? And I haven't seen it. And the main problem is it has been on Gogglebox, so I feel like it's spoiled for me. Yes. At this stage, that's sometimes the peril of Gogglebox. You need to have done your homework before you go in. I have heard nothing but good things, and I am behind on that one, I'm sorry.
Okay. I also watch Fair City. I have to agree that most of the storylines do run for far too long. Sometimes looking at it, I do wish Ciarán would either kill Kate or just let her go. That storyline is such a bore fest, as the bullet blouses down. We are talking about fictional characters here, just in case anyone just tuned in. And Alan wants to know, does the TV Lad have any info on the new Twin Peaks series?
So not much beyond that. It is starting soon enough. It is reuniting all of the principal cast. It has a massive cast. It's something like 200 people listed in its IMDb.
Crikey.
It is absolutely massive. Nothing really is known beyond the fact that it is going back. It'll be as weird and strange as ever.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if you can replicate that same thing, really. And there might be diminishing returns because one show I'm watching in kind of small bits is Legion, which reminds me a bit of Twin Peaks in the sense, but they've given themselves a space to be like you don't really know where the hell you are most of the time, but it has its own internal logic.
Very much so.
But even that, you could see if you keep going with this, if you don't kind of resolve this storyline or one of the storylines, then it will get boring after a while. It'll be just like weirdness for the sake of it.
I see where you're coming from with Legion.
Yeah.
I would say, regrettably, when you reach the end of it, you'll see that they've clearly tipped off for a second season. So there's more coming.
I suspect. So that's the disappointment, the second season. And the end of This Is Us, I was screaming at the telly. How the hell did he die? Come on. That was like so mean to their viewers not to do that. Now, it finished weeks ago. Come on, if you don't know that. And by the second or third last episode, if you don't know, it's tipped there anyway. So anyway, you don't know who he is. Okay, I won't mention The Sopranos. Okay, but he sees dead people in The Sopranos. I bought and tried to read the book Girl Boss, but couldn't finish it for the same reason. She's very unlikable, says the texter. Right, we're going to move on to our final show we're going to talk about today. Veep, new episodes on Sky Atlantic at Tuesdays at 10 past 10 and repeated throughout the week. Here's the clip.
Well, this last year has been fun. You know, really fun. I mean, I'm not going to lie, you know, to have gotten so close to the presidency and then have the American people and Congress reject me was devastating. But I did reacquaint myself with an old friend of mine by the name of Selina Meyer.
There you go. That's a clip from Veep. So I suppose... Where has she been, if you like, in the imaginative sense, where has she been in between series?
Well, based on what we learned in the first episode, she was either institutionalized or in a spa, as she is getting the message out there. Veep is a very intriguing show because it is arguably one of the most cynical shows on TV,
and
even more cynical than any political drama out there. It has also shown itself to be perhaps far more closer to the truth than we ever could have imagined. And it's very interesting to see where they're going to take the show in a post-presidential
election.
Post Easter has come and gone. So a post-Trump world.
Yeah.
And there's a very interesting interview with the current showrunner of the show, a man named David Mandel, who it was in the New York Times, where he was asked that question. And he said, basically, the premise is that now... the sort of the joy of Veep is that it shows that these really cynical people can actually get their comeuppance and have to deal with life after they've had this moment, incredible moment. So at the end of the last season, Veep took a very interesting turn where it removed President Selina Meyer from the White House. And she lost the election and lost the runoff and lost everything. So now she's out as an ex-president making her way around the world. And we find her and her team scattered all over the place. So she's in New York running a fund that is for literacy until someone throws her a sort of a curveball in an interview that she just throws at AIDS as well. And then her, you know, Gary is still by her side, but Amy is championing a gubernatorial election in Nevada, I think it is, trying to bring the state into a modern world. And all her team are dispersed all over the place. So it'll be interesting to see each of the characters develop outside of the White House and see where they go with them, or to see how they'll bring them back together. Now, as a first episode, I will say the first episode of Veep is always kind of a bit of a just a bit of a pace setter. It doesn't really sort of kick off ever. It really comes into its own right after the first episode. And I would say the same thing of the last season. When the first episode aired the last season, I kind of thought it was okay, episode was fine. And then immediately the second episode was hilarious and it kicked off from there. So I'm hoping the exact same thing happens again. Because this episode I thought was good. It had good lines. It was very funny. It was nice to see everybody again. It wasn't absolutely hilarious, but it is still very hopeful. Now, I'm also intrigued to see what will happen if the show cannot continue its incredible pace, because if you're looking at the show, it is incredibly successful in terms of viewers and popularity and criticism and awards, because at the Emmys for the last 5 years, Julia Louis-Dreyfus has been nominated and won every single time.
That's fairly impressive.
So it is intriguing to see if that can keep going as well.
And is it clear that she's going to head back into the political realm at all, or she might just continue to flounder outside? And surely she can't.
So she's a one-term only president, so she can go back.
She
could do a second term, because she can only do two terms. Unless someone is going to correct me, because she started off obviously as the vice president and then became president through, you know, abdication or whatever. That's not the verb, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So there might be some political nut out there who knows whether the exact legal ramifications of that. But yes, she could in theory become president again. I would be surprised if that's what the show does, because that's not a challenge. And this is a show always about challenging people. I mean, the whole point is that it showed these sort of people who thought they were very conniving and clever and able to weasel their way up to the top. And then once at the top, found that they're just surrounded by idiots like everyone else.
Yeah.
So it's now about finding out what you do after you've had that moment in power. And yeah, I think it is. I really, really hope it is as good as before, because even just that as a prospect, I think, is very tantalizing.
They're going to have to, if the different characters are scattered around, they're going to have to bring them back together somehow or another.
They are. So perhaps one way we know that they're going to do that is... her press secretary, who now seems even so much more competent than Spicer, Matt, McClintock, he has been sort of brought back in to help her finish the manuscript of her autobiography, which is already 6 months late for the editors. And then, you know, Gary is her sort of bagman who's still always by her side. The only person we actually didn't see from the main cast was Sue, the secretary, who was absent because she had some of the best lines in the show. But everyone else, I guess, they'll all be roped back in somehow.
Yeah, because Amy was almost like the one who was clearly the one with any brains or political nous. So even in previous series, it was always kind of a tug to try and get her back. There might be stretching credulity even further to bring her back.
Well, she's currently, so in where the setup we got for her is that she is now managing her fiance's run for the governor. For the governor position in, I think it's Nevada. I can't remember which state it was. But other than that, we heard her at the very beginning in the clip as well. She's on this morning on CBS, and her former staff member Dan is also the presenter on the show. He's sort of a sit-in presenter, so he's forging a media career. I still think it is one of the most watchable sitcoms, and the return on investment is very high because the writing is very sharp and bitter and mean, and it has, you know, it's just really funny.
And it might actually, given what's happening to it now, people are scattered around, it has more targets,
very much so,
rather than just, you know, West Wing politics.
Exactly,
kind of thing.
Moncrief.
with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? GasNetworks.ie/movetogas.